I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. And now, more election talk and analysis with Michael Gagan. He is a government and media relations consultant. He served in government and is a frequent commentator on political matters. We first came across Mike when he was a regular on the old Rafe Mayer show with David Schreck. He continues to debate Schreck Friday mornings on CFAX. He was a ministerial assistant to an NDP cabinet minister in their first term in the 1990s, and he later joined the BC Liberals. He's also a former president and CEO of the BC Construction Association. He is the owner of Michael Gagan Consulting in Victoria, where he joins me from this day. His website is mgcltd.ca. He's got a blog there as well. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Mike Gagan. Good morning, Mr. Gagan.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be there.
This whole Van Dongen thing, he's resigned now, apparently.
Yes.
You take that with the other candidates who have spotty driving records.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this will matter to voters?
I don't really think it will, because first of all, there's a lot of voters out there who have received speeding tickets, or even if they haven't, there's lots of voters who generally abide by the speed limits, but on occasion have themselves exceeded the speed limit, but just happen to have been lucky enough not to get caught. So I think there's a lot of feeling of there, but for the grace of God go I. And I think, you know, and we also remember that this is a nonpartisan issue. I mean, there was even a song done about Mo Sohota back when he was in cabinet, and he was notorious for getting speeding tickets. And then, of course, there's the legendary Flying Phil Gilardi, and he got the nickname Flying Phil because, you know, he was busy laying down blacktop all over British Columbia, helping to build modern BC, and was famous for, you know, driving well above the posted speed limits whenever he hit the highway.
He was just testing it, though, wasn't he?
that's right. He was just testing it, testing the design limits. But, you know, that brings up another point in terms of these issues. And the fact is that a lot of roads, a lot of highways, were actually designed for significantly higher speed limits. And the thing that we forget in British Columbia is that, you know, other jurisdictions with the same sort of road conditions have significantly higher speed limits. Like, if you go to France, I mean, the standard speed limit is not 80 or 90 or 100 kilometers an hour, it's 130. And I think most people would look askance at Germany, where, you know, their highways have no speed limits. Like, most would agree that that's ridiculous. But at the same time, you know, when you see multi-lane straight stretches of highway and then the speed limit's posted at 80 or 90, people are kind of like, generally people are voting with their feet, and usually on those sections of highway, people are doing 110, and so they're going 20 kilometers above the speed limit.
Do you think that in the case of, I forget the guy's name now, the guy who has, you know, the conviction, and then you've got this guy Mark Dalton Maple Ridge and his emails being dredged up. And then you also have the NDP candidate Ray Lamb and his
yep.
Facebook photos. Do you think that the candidates haven't been vetted properly this time around?
Well, I actually take the opposite viewpoint, and that is I think we're getting far too picky as in terms of what we're expecting. I mean, we're electing people who represent us. We're not electing the Pope. We're not electing, you know, some form of, you know, puritanical virginal priesthood. We're electing people who are supposed to represent us, and that means human beings with the same sort of foibles and missteps that we take. And the really disconcerting trend that I find is with the rise of social media, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, etc., particularly younger people. I mean, you know, we've all heard of, you know, the indiscretions of youth. When we're young and dumb, we do and say foolish things. The problem is that whether it's a picture or a comment or what have you, anything that winds up on the internet stays there forever. So if you have an embarrassing photograph of yourself that was taken when you were drunk at a party when you were 19 years old, and then decades in the future, you run as a candidate, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, the fact that you're a serious, well-educated a person, highly intelligent, doesn't matter because, hey, look, we found this photograph of you being drunk and stupid when you were 19. It's like, well, so what? Lots of people got drunk and stupid at 19. So I think in terms of our our judgment of candidates, I think we're going to have to lighten up. Other than that, the only alternative is we're going to have a pool of candidates that are basically very bland people who have not done much, and then we're all going to turn around and complain why we have such insipid and uninspiring politicians.
Well, you're right about that, yeah. You're on CFAX once a week. What are the callers that call in? What have they been talking about in this campaign?
Well, you know, it really varies. I mean, usually it's sort of the topics du jour, like, you know, whatever's been in the media in the last few days preceding the radio show. But, I mean, I think one of the things that's been a real disconcerting change in terms of this election is there seems to be a real lack of engagement by the voters. I mean, it's almost like, you know, here we are, the most challenging economic predicament we've had in 70 years. I mean, this is the worst economic calamity to befall the planet since the Great Depression. And, you know, people are not really engaged with this provincial election. And I know a lot of voters out there, a lot of politicians out there, including ones that are in ostensibly safe ridings, that are terrified that, you know, they're busy door knocking, and they're terrified that, oh, yeah, you know, you've got my support, don't worry, you'll get reelected. But, yeah, will those people actually, you know, leave their living rooms and you know, go to the school or wherever the polling station is and actually vote? And they're really worried that, you know, there's a real lack of motivation for people to actually go out and vote.
Whose fault is that? I mean, we have these fixed election dates. That's supposed to, you know, tell us when the next election will be. But at the same time, this is one of the dullest campaigns. No one's talking about this on the street, aren't they?
Well, you know, I think there's a number of things that are happening. First of all, the fact that we have a fixed election date means we didn't have an election around an issue. Like, you know, we've come to some sort of watershed event, and okay, fine, you know, let's go to the people, right? So it was an election campaign that was called because, you know, Gordon Campbell promised a fixed election date, and a lot of people liked that idea. The problem is you can get into exactly this situation. Well, we're having an election because one is due, not because, you know, there was some sort of, I don't know, focal point that triggered an election. The second thing is that as we become sort of more interactive in terms of our technology, whether it's our cell phones, our desktops, or our laptop computers, I think we're going to have to really revisit the way we vote. And, you know, as tricky as this is, you know, with viruses and hackers and whatnot, I think maybe we need to look at a way where people can securely register to vote and vote from their own homes. I mean, I think that's an idea that Elections BC is going to have to seriously consider, because I think most people are like, okay, I'm willing to, you know, go to a website and, you know, enter a password and do whatever and click and vote, but, like, get in my car and try and find out where John Q. Smith Elementary School is and, like, and then line up to vote. A lot of people are like, ah, forget it. And I think that's something that they're going to have to revisit. And then the other thing is what we talked about already, and that is we, you know, we don't see the kind of, you know, barnstorming speeches, right, that you see in days of old, because there's so much information out there. People are going to less and less controversial candidates, so therefore they're more and more boring and they're less and less inspiring, and the message is all dulled down to vanilla, and so nothing grabs people's attention. And instead there's this downward spiral, like, oh, John Van Dongen had a couple of speeding tickets, yeah, like half the people I know, oh, well, now he's resigned because of that. Or Ray Lamb had a couple of embarrassing photographs on Facebook. Okay, it was stupid for him to have those pictures on Facebook, he should have removed them, but why did he resign as a candidate? Everyone has said or done stupid things. If you're younger, you're more likely to have them wind up on Facebook. If you're older like me, I'm 43, it's less likely. But, you know, that's a generational thing. It isn't because, you know, I lived a life that was more pure.
Yeah, there's no referendum on computer voting, but there is one on STV.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that'll work?
Well, again, there's just such a high level of disinterest. I mean, there's obviously people who are passionately for it, and there's, you know, people who support the Greens because they see that as a way for them to get people into the legislature, sitting in the legislature. There's also people on the political right that, you know, at this point in British Columbia, you know, if you had, you know, a viable Conservative and a viable Liberal Party, you know, they'd split the vote and the NDP would win election after election. That's why we generally only ever have one center-right party in British Columbia, whether it was the Socreds and now it's the Liberals, because every time there's a split, the NDP comes up the middle. all, you know, under STD with a preferential ballot system, then it would allow, you know, liberals to be liberals and conservatives to be conservatives and whatever else to be whatever else. So that holds a certain appeal. But again, people are kind of going, you know, at the end of the day, will people actually vote on this? So I'm really curious to see how the numbers come out on that referendum, because it's not really something a lot of people are talking about.
Is that why we don't see very much polling on it?
I mean, obviously, you know, the powers that be have a vested interest in the status quo. I myself am undecided on it. I'm kind of six of one, half dozen of the other on it. So I'm neither an opponent nor a supporter of it. I'm just kind of like, you know, I kind of see pluses and minuses either way. I think, you know, it hasn't been a big topic of discussion. And again, it seems to go with this whole state of ennui that we have about this election. It's like, ho-hum, we have an election. Whatever.
Yeah. This Patrick Kinsella thing, has this given people like you, lobbyists, a bad name?
Well, I mean, lobbyists have a bad name. I mean, the term lobbyist is a pejorative, right? Let's keep that in mind, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of what lobbyists do. I mean, the term that we like to use in Canada is government relations consultant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact is that the less well government works, the more work there is for people like me. And we're the people who go in to help solve problems, right? It certainly, there can be, as we've seen in the United States, where there's no campaign spending limits. I mean, lobbyists can make huge sums of money and can be in charge of, you know, flowing millions of dollars to different candidates and helping to determine which candidates win, right? But that's not the situation here in Canada. Here in Canada, I mean, in a sense, we're almost like ombudspersons for hire, right? You know, a problem has arisen. The bureaucracy, for whatever reason, is intransigent, or the politicians and the people who have the problem have had a falling out. They don't trust each other. They don't want to deal with each other. And you're kind of able to come in as sort of a third party and, in a sense, engage in a bit of shuttle diplomacy. And I mean, I'm talking about a worst-case scenario where things have really gone off the rails, no pun intended, in terms of Kinsella.
Right.
And so, with a bit of shuttle diplomacy, you can kind of get people to sort of, you know, lower their hackles and be less defensive, and then actually start focusing in on the problem rather than the personalities, and then come to a resolution. So, I mean, I think the work we do is, you know, it's akin to, you know, when you hire a lawyer to go into court, or you have an accountant do your taxes. I mean, you don't need a lawyer to go into court. You don't need an accountant to do your taxes, and you don't need me to help you engage with government. But generally speaking, you're going to be a hell of a lot more successful if you engage someone who does this for a living than you trying to do these sort of things as an amateur.
Carol James and her leadership, back to the campaign for just a sec, she hasn't had a very good campaign until, well, who knows how this Van Dongen thing turns out. But do you think her leadership of the NDP is in question after this election?
I actually do. I attended a breakfast with John Horgan on the weekend. I also attended a dinner with Ida Chong, the Liberal Minister of Small Business. But, I mean, with John Horgan, I mean, he was at great pains to portray himself as a political moderate. And I think that, given the relatively weak campaign that Carol James has run, and given the fact that, you know, she's been outmaneuvered on the environmental front by both the Liberals and, of course, the Greens, and then to have people like Zipporah Berman and other environmentalists slam her on the carbon tax issue, I think this has been a fairly disastrous campaign. And I think that if the NDP end up losing seats in this election, and so the Liberals are reelected with a greater majority, I think you will see Carol James resign as leader, and I think you will see a leadership race, and I would see a number of people who would step forward as contenders for that. If John Horgan is reelected in his riding, he would be one. Another would be Adrian Dix over in Vancouver, and I'm sure there would be others.
what do you think? What do you think will happen on the 12th? I mean, in terms of the election, do you think it'll be status quo? Do you think we'll see?
Well, you know, if intentions turn out to be the same as votes, and that's a big if nowadays, then I think we will see the Liberals reelected with a slightly larger majority. Like, I think there's some ridings that they may gain back, like Saanich South, where Robin Adair is running. That is my prediction. But at the end of the day, it depends on who's got the more motivated voter base, and the NDP have always been very adept at rallying their troops, rallying their supporters, and getting them to the polling stations, right? You know, because they just have that ability, you know, to sort of rally people to the cause. So, you know, if a lot of Liberals sit on their hands and assume that Gordon Campbell's got this re-election in the bag, they could wake up to Carol James being the premier. If on the other hand, people follow their intentions with actions and actually go out and vote, then I think Gordon Campbell will be handily reelected.
And STV, how do you think that'll go?
I actually think that STV will carry, and then it will be a question of, but then people will be kind of like, oh, well, yeah, I don't really care. And then, you know, then it becomes a question of, okay, you've had this thing pass, but people really aren't passionate about it, so does the government actually go ahead and implement it? And then I think if government tries to start implementing it, then I think you'd start to see people actually engage in a dialogue about it, ironically enough. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
This leaders' debate on Sunday night, do you think this matters, leaders' debates in general?
I think right now everyone, from the candidates right up onto the leaders, are desperate to engage the voters. And, you know, whether it's doing the Burma Shave thing, you know, waving signs on the overpasses as commuters head to or from work, door knocking, sending messages on Twitter, setting up campaign pages on Facebook, everyone is desperate to engage the voter. And the leadership debates, there was one on radio. I actually thought Jane Stirk of the Green Party got off the best line, where she said, well, you know, if it wasn't for us, this election would be about he's arrogant and she's incompetent. And I thought that was actually the best soundbite of the debate. But I know they're certainly hoping it'll be relevant, and as we get closer to the election day, you know, I'm certainly hoping that people will tune in and listen to the leaders and then make an informed decision.
Mike, it's been fun having you on.
Yeah.
And we should have you on again.
I would welcome that.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The website is mgcltd.ca. There's a link there to his blog. Mike Gagan on the line. I'm Joseph Plano.